Caucus time as of about an hour today. Iowa caucuses are happening. There's, you know, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden are kind of neck and neck over the last couple polls. We got Robert in the studio today, too.
Hello.
Robert leaves. Actually, by the time this drops, you're going to be
I'll be out. At the socialist paradise known as Walt Disney World.
You'll be at Disney World. You and Aaron, and Aaron's not even here yet, but... you're going to be at Disney World tomorrow.
So my plan is, we already Googled it. Like Aaron bought a Bernie shirt for her and I have one for me. Like we're not going to wear them on the same day.
Organize Goofy. Make Goofy into a Bernie bro.
Actually, they do have a pretty strong union. But thing is...
Now they do?
That's well, yeah. New, huh? It's. I don't know if it's new or not. I know... What's-her-face from the DSA, from New Orleans DSA. I want to say... I can see her name. I can see it.
What's she look like?
She's short. Kind of like frizzy hair, like Kathy.
Caitlin
Monroe. Yeah. She's going to hate that.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. That's terrible. That you just,
I
totally
denounce and reject
off on
everything
that.
You just said. And Caitlin is a wonderful, lovely person.
I never said anything about her. I just said hair like Kathy. That's all. But, so there is a union down there. I don't know how I know they were kind of,
what did Caitlin do with it?
Well, no, she just informed me that there was one, but I already knew. I know she's organizing in Orlando, and then she went down to Miami. That was a while ago. But during the whole We Can't Survive on 725, that's how Bernie Sanders fought for Amazon and Disney employees to get paid $15 an hour.
Yeah, he did a little intervention into that whole thing, saying like the Disney executives make millions and millions of dollars, and you know, the workers are like sleeping in their cars.
Also, they got shamed by Walt Disney's granddaughter.
Yeah, that's a wild one.
Yeah, like, I can't think of her name right now off the top of my head.
It doesn't matter.
But yeah, she's pretty rad. She's a documentary filmmaker, and also, I'm just gonna call her a socialist. I'm gonna put her on that because all her politics are socialist. So I'm gonna put her out there, shoot my shot, get her on the show. But no, so they have a union down there for sure. But the thing is, during that whole like We Can't Survive on 725, they never threatened a strike or anything like that. But they did organize and they did march, and let their voices be heard. And I can kind of understand that because you've got this biggest company in the world, one of the, you know, it's a monolith. So you want to have a light. You want to gently. I get the strategy is like we're all just not going to be like we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore. You want to gently nudge a company like that because just by gently nudging somebody with so many tentacles and everything, and especially being like a family thing, you can shame them. And that's what it is. It's a shame campaign.
Right. Well, and I mean, again, whatever the tactic that the workers come up with, they need to be organized to do anything. Right. And that's the sort of the thing that was the most successful. And then, you know, sort of the workers that are there are the ones that are in the best decision to make decisions based off of what they know about how their workplace is.
Well, the sad thing is because in a workplace like that, the way it's organized, they don't have a ton of leverage because they have so many, me being a Disney fanatic on all, I could tell you everything about like
Marvel
weird
movies.
No, I hate the Marvel movies. If you would have told me like a Marvel Comics guy, I've probably read Infinity War 10 times, like growing up. Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity Saga, all that. If you'd have told me it said, hey, little Robert, 20 years from now, there's going to be an Infinity War movie and you won't care anything at all about it.
I wouldn't have believed it.
I wouldn't have. I was like, if you'd have told me there was a Doctor Strange, like, yeah, you know, like when you're in your 30s, there's going to be a Doctor Strange movie.
Yeah.
And you're going to be like, and you're not going to care.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're out of your mind. Of course, this is going to be the best thing ever. Like, no, you're not going to care. And
you know, like it sounds like we're kind of changing subjects, but like I want to talk about the Marvel movie.
I was going to go back though.
Oh, okay. Well, but I do want to say, like, I like weirdly don't care about any of them. Let's put a pin in that.
They just have so much noise. It's just like it's the same.
Hey, what's up, Johnny?
I wonder if the cats are outside or something. Can you pause?
All right, we're going to pause it. Yeah, we paused, but we
Yeah, I haven't let my cat in.
Johnny, we're at Robert's house right now, and we had a little cat visitor. So everybody say hello to Annie. So you were going Marvel on about movies, Disney.
But Disney, no. So their employees. The sad thing is, from my knowledge of Disney Corporation, they don't have a lot. Full-time employees don't have a lot of leverage because Disney has so many of these like sucker hustle employment programs, like the mm-hmm. college program.
Oh yeah. And then they've got like, I thought about doing that when I was in college.
Yeah, I know a guy who did it. Mm-hmm. And then they've got the international like program. So they've got all these like mechanisms to bring in cheap labor to replace you.
Right.
So that's why you have to and I'm not saying like you shouldn't negotiate with these. You shouldn't negotiate with these like corporations, these terrorist corporations who want to like undervalue you, but you have also have to have be aware of your circumstances and how much
have
leverage
a strategy.
Yeah, you currently have. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we'll be down there. So the strategy is we Googled it. People wear MAGA stuff there all the time. Mm-hmm. So I was like afraid. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not trying to get kicked out of Disney World for my Bernie shirt. But Aaron's gonna wear hers and on one day. I'm gonna wear mine. We go to Magic Kingdom on Wednesday, mm-hmm. our first day.
No,
first
you have a whole
day.
Itinerary.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole thing. Like going to, I'll get into that. But we're going to the Magic Kingdom, and I don't want to go into the Hall of Presidents, but I'm going to stand out there and be like, with my Bernie shirt on, and be like, coming soon. Coming soon to the Hall of Presidents. Or maybe I'll go in. I thought about waiting to the end of the day so I didn't care about getting kicked out and just like not being like, oh, Trump's the worst, but just wait, just like go see the Hall of Presidents thing and then just wait until Trump because mm-hmm. it's at the end anyway. And then just mm-hmm. go, all right, I'm gonna head out mm-hmm. and just say it real loud. But
I've been in the Hall of Presidents. It's a weird one.
I've never been in there actually. I've only been to Disney once.
I mean, it's one of no. Twice. I've been a couple times. Like Kimberly used to do chaperoning, and I would go along for yeah. her school. They would bring the fifth graders up there for the fifth grade trip. My wife's a teacher too, to the audience. So like,
that's right.
We're both both in the very lucrative field of education. But we would kind of go up there, and one of the things that we would have, like, they would have like special itineraries that would have like educational content there that was part of it.
Why do you do that?
It's actually pretty good though. It wasn't like boring. It was a lot like physics of
like Epcot Center stuff. I had to do that. Did I ever tell you that when mm-hmm. I grew up? So I was in elementary school in Ohio, and the big amusement park is Kings Island. It's Cincinnati. So Cedar Point is in Sandusky, which is way far away. Like
I went
like
there
a
when I was a kid,
drive.
Actually.
But they did that to us. They were like, "Oh yeah, none of the roller coasters are going to be open. We're going to learn about like
boring
water
oh
off
God.
A duck's back or something."
No,
stupid.
They can go on a ride. The kids could go on a ride. Like it wasn't one of those ones where like we were there for the whole time. We were there during. Like for a week,
right.
So if they wouldn't have let
that's
kids
right.
go on the go on this trip and go on these rides, there would have been a riot. Nobody would go.
Good.
You know.
Well, that seems fair then. Mm-hmm. But
part of it was always the Hall of Presidents.
Have you seen the Hall of Presidents, Trump? Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Google. I want y'all in the listening audience. Go on YouTube and Google this thing. Go mm-hmm. on YouTube and Google it. Go on YouTube and watch the show. Just,
go to YouTube. Type in Google
Trump. Whatever. If you want to use a burner account, so it doesn't ruin mm-hmm. your YouTube algorithm, be my guest, but look at like Disney.
It's already ruined. There's no such thing as a good
that
YouTube
thing
algorithm.
That animatronic they have of Trump, uh-huh. like you can tell they just like okay, they built the robot for the whatever the animatronic from yeah. the ground up. You know, probably they might have repurposed it, but that mask, like the face that it wears, mm-hmm. is so obviously Hillary Clinton.
Oh, they just painted it Trump.
They had to, you know, that's what happened too. Like they had to
they
had to scramble. You know, mm-hmm. they had that thing made.
I mean, they might have fixed it by now, huh?
I don't know. They probably maybe, but that thing, mm-hmm. that thing looks like Hillary with a wig. Oh, it's unbelievable!
That's hilarious.
Dude. It's brutal.
Oh my gosh!
But
I'm actually interested in just like seeing what it because they all say something. All of the like weird.
It's like something really. I've never watched it, but yeah. I heard it's something like obviously he didn't write.
We're gonna make America great again.
No,
you know,
it's
like
something really like soaring. Like,
oh yeah.
Obviously there's no way he had anything. And I would have loved to see how many takes they went through with that guy too.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to be the person that's like, Trump is stupid. We got him. Like that thing that went around last night after
the Super
Bowl.
That's why he wins when you underestimate him like that.
That thing that went around last night after the Super Bowl where like Trump doesn't know the difference between Missouri and Kansas. And everybody and all the you know, Mick Resistance like, ha ha ha, we got him. Like, mm-hmm. No, you don't. Like, mm-hmm. the people who like him don't care anything about that. Because you like, most of them are stupid too.
Most people don't know. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know if that's something that's not something that's going to change anybody's mind.
You never. And I say this. And I'm probably like rambling about it. There's never been like this is a disease that people have from watching The West Wing and like Disney after school specials. There's never been. Life is not an after school special, and you're a teacher, so you know this, even if you can't say it. There's never been a time ever in the existence of a playground where a bully, where a bully has ever backed off because the kid went, well, actually.
Yeah, it's actually logical to it's actually illogical to be a bully because that means that you're taking out your own personal insecurities out on me. Why are you giving me another wedgie? You giving me a noogie and spitting in my face?
But nobody's ever been able to mm-hmm. do that, though. Mm-hmm. Like, that thing you're spitting right there? Mm-hmm. And no, nobody's trying to hear that.
Right, exactly.
Ever. So you cannot well actually your way out of, like, a bad president. The only way you can...
You can't speak to your manager out of a president.
No,
but, you know.
Exactly. You can't do stupid parliamentary mm-hmm. moves to try to... Yeah, let's go into that.
You gotta build up power, man.
I've never... You know, and I've never been like, we haven't talked on this show about the impeachment at all because I thought it was a waste of time.
Well, the Dean show, we talked about just sort of like what's going on.
Mm.
And I sort of like, I was very like critical at every angle of it. But I guess the way that we've kind of talked about impeachment the most is sort of like, why does this matter? And is this an opportunity for the left to do anything?
No.
And
spoiler.
Yeah. Yes, and I the only way that any of it sort of makes any kind of positive directioning is if it sort of like heightens the contradictions. With the Democrats, have been extremely careful to not heighten any existing structural contradictions. Mm-hmm. They just because they're spending most of the time like limiting what they're doing to sort of like one instance or two. I think there were two total articles of impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was like corruption, the other was like obstruction of Congress. And then it was like forcing a quid pro quo and then covering it up, and that was basically what it was. And he basically not implicating like any Democrats, not implicating Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, any of the Democrats in how they usually do business. The entire point of it is to just sort of like isolate Trump, which is not possible, and it won't do anything, and it's just a spectacle.
Well, I mean, the thing is that, to go back on my point about like you can't well actually your way out of stuff, honestly, like everything you said is true. The mm-hmm. only part that I paid any attention to with the impeachment is, you know, is after the vote went down to not have witnesses.
Yeah.
And all the liberal pearl clutching on MSNBC and CNN, there went, these Republicans have no respect for the Constitution.
Where is your shame, sir?
Where is your shame? All of and they're 100% right. Like, the thing is, they're right. But the thing that they
what
don't understand
do
is
they don't care.
They don't give a darn. They don't care at all. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to, well, actually a bully.
Mm-hmm.
That is not going to work. Politics, the Republican Party, for all their evil,
mm-hmm.
they understand what politics is. Politics is about amassing power and then wielding that power.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Well, the Democrats don't even amass power.
Yeah.
They don't even do that part.
They think they're going to logic you out of. They think you're going to be able to work
Dave
with
Rubin.
People. No, yeah. They think, and I hate to say, I don't want to like riff. I don't want to like, you know, steal from Chapo. But like, if you listen to Chapo, they're 100% right. Like, this is not an episode of The West Wing.
Yeah,
you're not going to shame these people.
That show poisoned an entire generation.
Absolutely.
Brain.
Like you, these people don't care about they don't care about being right. All they care about is winning.
Which, I mean, that's fine. You can be very wrong. Man, wow, Johnny is having a good time. You can be very, very, very wrong about a lot of stuff. and still get respect for like how you're operating things and still get attention for how you're for how you're behaving, because it's relatable, right? I mean, we've all sort of had our times where, you know, we kind of like dug ourselves into a hole and we've backed ourselves into a corner in terms of like being technically right on points or whatever. But when it comes to, you know, like whether or not, you know, what side of that coin you're on, and if you're going to be sort of like the, you know, the Lisa Simpson or the Martin Prince from The Simpsons, right, or whatever, you know, those are the people who are like not going to get popularity and not get any victories.
I mean, you have to go back, like what Aaron says all the time is that, talking about good faith actors, like you can only you can only argue with people on merit and try to like touch their humanity or touch their logic when they're a good faith actor.
Yeah, and when you agree on basic facts,
yes,
and
you have first principles,
and you got nothing to work from.
Exactly.
I mean, if you don't have any basic like grounds on which you have commonality, then you either need to find one in order to convince somebody, or you need to just beat them, which is, you know, well, honestly, I mean, if you look at it, Democrats have a lot more in common, like elite Democrats specifically, national level and people with national ambition Democrats have a lot more in common with these sort of like MAGA Chud Republicans.
Absolutely.
Than they do with you and me.
100%. We just watched a clip, and I don't want to you know, I don't want to go too far, like talking about the Iowa caucus, but we just watched a clip of Chris Matthews on the Lefty Channel, the Left.
WHIV 102.3. Good morning, comrade. So Chris Matthews
on MSNBC, crying. He's on the verge of tears. Tears are about to be squirting out of his tear ducts because he's upset that Bernie Sanders is probably going to win the caucus tonight in Iowa. This is the guy that's on the channel.
This dude's got it.
That's supposed to be on our side,
I can't even look at MSNBC like that. I mean, they're just elite media too. They're just elite media.
But I'm talking about the way they position themselves.
They position themselves to the left of the Republicans,
right,
and only as far left as it takes to be to the left of like the Republicans and Fox News and all of them, right? And CNN is like, they just don't care. They're just mercenaries in the center.
You know? I mean, if that,
they're just a bunch of like dogs that are barking at whatever at the window. You know, no offense, Johnny.
I don't know. I would say they're worse. I mean, it's become a cliche at this point.
Dogs are good, at least, and CNN's bad.
anybody who will threaten their power structure, who will threaten, as simple as, you know, these people on the news, on cable, are making millions of dollars. Anybody that's going to threaten to raise their taxes by any percentage is an enemy and must be destroyed.
Well, yeah. And who owns MSNBC?
Well, that'd be NBC, Westinghouse, and GE.
Yeah. So it's essentially government, like military contractors.
Yep.
And so there's only so far that they'll go. And, you know, who founded CNN? Ted Turner, a billionaire. I mean, he's out now, but AOL Time Warner is still a hugely like held corporation that only is interested in what returns are going to be gotten on investments.
Sure.
And one bad thing for returns on investments is taxing corporations, right?
And it's a very, I mean, that's 100% all true. And I just, to bring it down to its like most base level, like a guy, we'll go into Bernie in the Iowa caucus, is a guy like Bernie who, if he's pissing those people off, if he's making them mad, you know he's hitting the spot. You don't even have to know if one guy's like, hey, I think people shouldn't have to ration insulin and your kids should be able to go to college. And everybody's like, oh, this guy's the return of McGovern and he's the worst thing ever.
Well, McGovern had awful labor politics,
absolutely,
by the way.
He was bad. But that's not the point. Like, they're like, oh, this guy's the worst thing ever, blah, 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 blah. He can't beat Trump and this and that. You know he's hitting the spot.
Mm-hmm.
You know he's doing it right. Like when you're making the enemies of the proletariat mad, you know that's the guy you need to go with.
Right.
That's why so many Trump dudes like him. That's why MAGA dudes like him.
Yeah, because there's at least like the thing, and there are a lot, and I think about this like tons. Like when people start making like very sloppy comparisons of Bernie Sanders to Trump, there's a lot of talk about how he appeals to like broadly like working class type people, and they often will say like working class white people, even though you and I both know he has the most diverse base that is out of anybody in the field right now, right? He's got the most people who are non-white that are in support of him.
Can you say that again? Because like, no, I think a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. No, you know, well, I said you and I know that.
Okay. Cause that's a problem. Like mm-hmm. when I was going to say, cause I knocked doors for Sanders in New Orleans in 16. Like a lot of people just didn't know who he was. And, right. you know, and even when you would turn on, like, I would turn on, like, our black radio station.
WBOK?
Yeah, there's this, like, still narrative of, like, he's just some white guy for white guy things. And that's like, quickly changing. But I was like, I think it's just something that, like, we shouldn't just, we know that. It's something that shouldn't even be brushed over. You know who, you know that Biden's down to 5, only, Bernie's within the margin of error now in South Carolina.
And South Carolina is important because it's considered to be like one of these very
well. It's Biden's firewall.
It's Biden's firewall, and part of the reason is that Biden supposedly has support of like the black community across the country, allegedly. And South Carolina is the first sort of big test for that. Right. Correct.
Yeah, and I think that I can say this. I can say this as a black person who's interacted with especially older black Democrats. I think I've even said this on the show. Is that it's not Stockholm syndrome, but like older black Democrats have this kind of like, yeah, you know, every time we've tried to ever do something, like it's been shot down, and they're just so, and like older black Democratic voters in the South, especially when you don't have a lot of allies, just feel so beat down to where it's just like, just don't hit me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're not the best. And that this is why I think Biden's support is. I
older
know
black Democrats that vote.
Yeah.
By the way.
I know you're not good. But you'll at least protect me from, like, literal Nazis.
Right. And honestly, I mean, he was tied up with Obama, who's still extremely popular amongst the black communities, despite the fact that he did very little for them. And inequality amongst the races increased under Obama and didn't decrease.
Right. I mean that would have been – we've had this conversation about, like – my theory of change on Obama, to where if I was going to be super generous to Barack Obama, he is a, he's got compromise just baked into his DNA.
And that was apparent from the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the way it is, but I don't know. We'll see how, and I'm not generous on his policy, but I've had to sort of like his policies have been at best, at worst, absolute trash. But
I mean, his border policy.
I can understand. Like, I feel like I could sit down with Obama and have a conversation with him and understand where his mindset is. As like a biracial dude, like I get him. I get like having a code switch. I get like you just want everybody to get along. You just want to like be cool with everybody. Like, I completely get that. But we just don't have time for that anymore. We don't have time for any kind of compromise.
Literally, like
we have no patience, you know. And I've said this like about Sanders is that you have to look past this whole ID politics thing of that's perfect levels, by the way. You know? You have to look past like ID politics of just like, oh well, how does this look? Oh, two old white guys. If Bernie wins the nomination, two old white guys duking it out. And I tweeted out something, not to toot my own horn, but I tweeted out something on the Good Morning Comrade account
at Comrade Morning.
You know, I said, look, I've made up my mind. I'm not going to vote for Bernie Sanders. What I am going to vote for is Medicare for all. I'm going to vote for people. People don't have to ration their insulin. I'm going to vote for like human dignity for everybody, racial justice for black, brown, queer, trans people.
It ain't about the person. It's about the thing that's going to be pushed forward for.
And Bernie is just the vehicle to get us there. Mm-hmm. If Bernie was a sentient like houseplant, like that's what that's who I'd vote for. Like I love the man. Like he's been consistent, and he's almost like a weird Old Testament. Like he's like Moses. He's been right on everything. He's wandered in the political wilderness all his life, and now he's on the precipice of getting to the promised land. I love the man to death, but like if he was somehow, God forbid, let's say he had another heart attack and died, we could plug somebody in. Like he is not the movement. He's not. We could plug somebody in to do that same policy.
AOC.
Yeah.
Italy,
anybody.
All these other people.
A sentient houseplant again. It doesn't matter.
Johnny, the three-legged dog.
Yeah, we could put my dog in there. If he's going to push the same. Yeah, it's not. It's not about a person at all.
Annie, you want to be the president?
She's
going to be the leader
wild.
Of the movement?
She does not care. She just looks at you like I'm going to. She's looking at her bowl and then looking at you. Looking at her bowl and then looking at you. Like when
she's sending a message.
When am I
going to
get
fed? That's a good communication skill.
It's a good cat, though. I love that cat.
Oh, yeah.
So what. What do you think about this caucus, my man? Like I'm kind of sick about it right now, but here we are.
Caucuses are, I mean, it's one of these sort of things where, first off, it's sort of arcane,
yeah.
In how like so a caucus. What is a caucus?
I'm talking about tonight, but you wanna Schoolhouse Rock us on the whole history of caucuses, but go ahead.
You go to somewhere, a local gymnasium or a, you know, VFW hall or something in Iowa, and not every state even freaking does this, right?
No.
And it's only, I think only like 30% of states or something like that.
Yeah, there's not a lot.
But essentially, the people in there go, like, they physically have to show up to, you know, one of these, you know, high school gymnasiums or whatever, or mm-hmm. and they, you know, this corner is for Joe Biden, that corner is for Bernie Sanders, that corner is for Yang, this corner is for, like, Tulsi Gabbard, that spot over there is for Warren, and people physically go into space and, like, debate one another about, like, why, well, if you don't get, like, 15% or whatever of, yeah. of any support for any candidate, then the people, they don't win anything. They're just eliminated.
Well, you're asked, let's say I was a Amy Klobuchar supporter and she's not going to be viable tonight in mm-hmm. like a ton.
You know, most places.
Most places in most caucus, what do you just call them? Polling centers? I don't know what
you
call
them. Each one is a caucus. They're all a caucus.
So she's not going to be viable in a lot of places. So if I was a clob.
A clob slob.
Clob slob. Then people would say, the person running the caucus would say, okay, your candidate's not viable. You can either pick another one
or leave
or go home. And I really hate caucuses because I think they only traditionally, and I think we're going to see a new model tonight of like if the turnout is going to be, you know,
heavy,
it's going to break all records supposedly tonight. But they don't like people have to be able like to go. It's not convenient for working people.
Yeah,
like, you have to like
because the difference is a primary,
right?
Which is just you go in, you vote, and you leave, just like regular vote,
right? But I do love caucuses because they have it's the only time in the United States, at least now. I know a bunch of rules changed or whatever. Traditionally, the only time we'd get ranked choice voting,
yeah,
which is if your preferred candidate is not viable, mm-hmm. then you get to pick a second and even a third.
There's a social component that I like.
I really like it.
There's
a
social component that you actually get to like talk to people.
The debate thingy, yeah.
And you get to like I mean, I'm going to sound like a nerd here, but like you get to like in public disagree with somebody and try to convince them to do something.
It reminds me of the political salons, what I've read about the political salons of
the French Revolution.
Of revolutionary France.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I mean, like, either way, like, there is a social component. You get to actually talk to people and see people in the flesh, and you have to disagree. That is, in a real sense, like, very humanizing in a way that a primary is sort of, like, very sterile.
And another thing, if you want to talk about, like, that's why people always say about Iowa, the talking heads on TV and MSNBC and CNN, they go, Iowans don't like They don't like combative politics, or they don't like combative advertising for candidates, that aggressive ads that, like,
so Midwestern.
I think the caucus has a lot to do with it, because
you gotta look these people in the eye.
Yep, you have to look them in the eye, and you can't go scorched earth on any candidate, because the candidate that you make not viable today, you're gonna need their supporters on caucus night.
Yeah, if so, the person's not viable, right?
There's a lot of,
if you burn Tulsi Gabbard to the ground, right, or Yang or whoever, then they might just not go to your person.
Right. There's a lot of, like, gamesmanship, almost like prisoner's dilemma, mm-hmm, to where it's like, well, how hard do I want to go on this person? Because if we go super hard on each other, we both might lose. And that's happened before.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of that happened
Dean,
before.
Right?
I want to say Dean and whoever he went against, and not allowed whoever, like, to
John
come.
Kerry won.
John Kerry was down.
And to talk about why, like, the first primary is so important, no matter who you're for, like, in 2004, nobody had any idea about who was actually the person that was going to be the one to come out and face George W. Bush in his reelection, right? Nobody knew. So, basically, when there was so much confusion, and, like, John Kerry wins the first one, everybody sort of, like, shrugs their shoulders and, like, oh, well, I guess he's the best one. You know,
right.
Like, it has a weird
influence.
Well,
it's just those
thing.
Two. It's like a prisoner's dilemma. Those two just went so scorched earth against each other that is just to let the other guy, mm-hmm, sneak through, because both sides, like, made
there,
each other,
yeah,
so angry that they were never going to come over to the other side. There's so much, like, metagame that goes on. To what I've read is that's why, if you go to our Twitter, like, that's why I changed our Twitter to our little, so it says Yang Sanders Unity Ambassador. Because
Yang actually did just come out and say that he expected
we're gonna need
in places where he wasn't viable.
We're gonna need
his
8%.
Yeah.
We're gonna need Tulsi's 5%, because we have to run up the score big and then hope that, like, a majority of if Warren's not viable, hope that a majority of Warren supporters don't go to Biden, which I don't think they'll do. But you don't know. People are weird, man. People are a mishmash of, like, random political ideas.
It's not consistent.
But
people
heard,
are not consistent. I know that, like,
all the back channel stuff that I've read, though, is that the Bernie campaign is being real nice. Been real nice to Tulsi and Yang supporters.
Yeah.
Like, hey, y'all, come on over.
When I've been talking to, like, anybody that I know that works for the campaign and who's been volunteering for the campaign, they have, like, a general strategy is to not attack. Like, part of what the entire idea is that you don't want to alienate, like, voters, but you do want to be aggressive in getting your message across.
Right.
And as far as, I mean, I can only speak for the Sanders campaign on this, or I can only speak about the Sanders campaign, I suppose, on this, is that they have had more volunteers going to Iowa than were expected, or they've exceeded their goals. They've exceeded their outreach targets in terms of texting, phone banking, and knocking on doors. So,
yeah, they went so hard. They told people not to call anymore because they just didn't want to annoy.
You
want to
run people off?
Yeah, they're like, we're good. Like,
imagine living in Iowa for, like, that month.
I can tell you right now,
it's probably horrible.
Well, like, I get. You know, I give money to the Bernie Sanders campaign and say what?
I'm just getting another one.
Oh, there might be one left.
Oh, you want it?
I don't know. No, I don't know if there is one. Oh, my gosh. This is why you don't do podcasting on your kitchen table. But I've heard that. What was I going to say? I totally lost track. Now Jeff is going to go get a beer. People are being nice to Tulsi and Yang, and if Warren is not viable, I really don't know where her support's going to go, because of this whole flame out of, like, Warren trying to make a kerfuffle out of something that happened a year ago, or probably most likely it didn't happen, because if Bernie didn't say that a woman can't win, that's ludicrous, but. With that whole kerfuffle, I don't know if there's, like, that hardened Warren support to where if Warren support, who maybe their second choice would have been Bernie, now they're just going to be like, I'm going to go home, which would work for a Bernie Sanders as well. If they're just going to be like, I'm going to go home, I'd have no problem with that. But I just don't want them going to Biden. That's my fear. That's my nightmare scenario, is like all that Bernie's going to win. Bernie's going to win the vote. But then all these like terrible neo-libs are going to like that aren't viable are going to Voltron together and move over to Biden. I don't think so, because I don't know why you would even be like a Warren supporter or even an Amy Klobuchar supporter and not just vote for Biden. I don't think that'll happen, but I'm like terrified that it will happen.
I will say this, and real quick, let's pause for station ID. You're listening to WHIV 102.3 FM New Orleans. This is Good Morning Comrade. One of the things that to sort of like slide into like a similar vein to what you were talking about, there is a lot of like internal Democratic Party and like look, I'm calling this part like balls and strikes the best I possibly can, right? The DNC over the like past week just changed their like donation rules,
right,
to include Michael Bloomberg in the upcoming New Hampshire debate that takes place on Friday.
Okay.
And why would they do that to include a candidate who is getting a very small that would not have qualified if they hadn't changed the rules, other than the fact that he contributed right before he ran before he decided to run for president, like $300,000 to the Democratic Party.
Okay. So here is the take that I'm going to play the part of the Democratic Party, of the DNC and Tom Perez here in this conversation. Now, no, I'm role playing, and I do not believe any of this, but here's
Can you talk in a Tom Perez voice?
No, I can't. Here is the cover that they're using, is that, well, it's not fair that this guy gets, he's figured out a grift in the system, and now he gets to run for president, burn millions of dollars on advertisement. He just had an ad in the Super Bowl.
Awful ad.
I didn't watch a down of the Super Bowl.
I watched the whole thing.
Dude, I'm so excited.
I was watching.
I'm growing up.
I was watching it, and I was kind of like half watching and half like, look, that's what people are posting about. I'm watching it, okay?
I didn't watch it.
But
I'm better than you.
It was like a mom or something like that who was talking about like gun violence or something like that, because that's one of Bloomberg's like pet issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of these moms demand like common sense, you know, gun reform or whatever, which I don't want to get in the gun conversation because it's complicated. It's actually a very marginal conversation in a certain sense. But like next thing you know, like Bloomberg's like sliding in, talking into this like, you know, this black mother who's talking about her child being done violence to, you know.
So what the DNC is saying is that because he can do that, he can buy ads in the Super Bowl, he can spend as much money and peel delegates off, it's not fair that he gets to do all that and not have to stand on a stage and answer any questions, mm-hmm. and gets to run with no opposition from any Democratic nominee.
Right,
not nominee, but any Democratic candidate.
Right, he could basically run in a his own little shell.
That sounds wonderful, but I don't believe a word of it.
No, of course not.
What they're doing is they're going to use Bloomberg as a backup.
Yeah,
when Biden is disintegrating, he's literally like
Tom Steyer.
He's deteriorating, like the guy.
He's literally like,
he's like
Mr.
The guy
Stark,
in,
I don't feel so good.
He's like the guy in RoboCop when he gets like all that sulfuric acid dumped on him, and he just goes, help me. The guy's just going, get away from me, man. Like, he's totally that guy. Like, but Joe Biden is just like melting down. And
go to Joe 30330.
They want somebody to be able to step in, peel some votes away so Bernie can't get, peel some delegates away so Bernie can't get the, not win, not even win, just peel delegates off so Bernie can't get to 51%, and then
have a broker convention. Make deals and then try and figure out how they can, like John Kerry was saying.
Well, they know exactly how they'll do it. They ain't got to try to figure out nothing.
Yeah,
they just
get through the first round, and then, so this is important, actually, mm-hmm. and not a lot of people understand how the...
I do, because I was a delegate.
Right, not a whole lot of people understand how the convention works and how it's changed from the last time.
The place where democracy dies.
Right, but it's changed from last year because they have these things called in the Democratic Party called superdelegates, right? And they are high-ranking party officials, either from states or who are members of the DNC, which is only like 400 people or something like that. It's like a very elite, small group.
Mayors, governors.
Yeah, elected officials for the most part. And they very much act in concord with one another, right? And one of the reasons in 2016 why Hillary was able to, she was able to sort of, even though the primaries were very, you know, in certain circumstances were very close, she would get way more delegates because almost 100% of the superdelegates went to Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. And after the last election, there was a rules change where the superdelegates would not be counted on the first round of balloting, but on the second round, they would be able to come in and do whatever they wanted. Is that correct?
That's correct. So pretty much, again, to break it down in layman's terms, is the if Bernie doesn't get away clean,
or if he can't get 50% of delegates.
Yeah, if he can't get 50%, then but he has the most.
Plus one.
Then the superdelegates can do whatever they want, and they can say, you know what? We want Joe Biden.
We don't even care.
We don't even care like how he ran. Yeah, we don't care how many delegates he has. We're just selecting Joe Biden, and that's it, and it's over, and that
them's the rule.
So,
and then there was a thing that I saw recently. Also, I'm sorry, I don't mean to jump in, but there was something that they were considering to like restore the power of the superdelegates in the first round after they had just changed them, without even enacting the rules that they had just changed. They're going to change them, not have any trial for it, then change him back before he could even do it.
Now, I want, with all my heart, I want Bernie Sanders to win the Democratic primary and turn the United States into a workers' paradise. But, that's a little facetious, but if that, I'm not afraid of, we need to push hard, we need to push hard and get Bernie over with the majority of delegates. Have no question about it. So he can run and wash Trump. No problem. Now, if that doesn't happen, the DNC has a choice. They either take a chance on, because they want, in that scenario, they just want Trump to win a second term. But right. In that scenario, they're going to be like, well, do we lose the party, control of the party, for probably ever to Bernie Sanders and then everybody who he's got lined up behind him, an AOC, Jemiah Paul,
Pramila Jayapal.
Yeah,
Rashida Tlaib.
That's going to be the new Democratic Party. So do we lose all our power and just let that happen?
Or do we burn it to the ground?
Or do we just steal the election? We steal the Democratic primary, give it to Joe Biden or Bloomberg or whatever. And then we destroy the Democratic Party. And so that's the decision I don't mind putting them to.
Well, then if that was to happen.
Because if they kill the party, that's fine.
Well, what's the alternative, though? Like, the alternative just to stay the same because they're not going to change it on any, like, just out of their goodness of their heart.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
you need to put them, you need to actually challenge these dynamics and not, you can't just let them continue to exist forever. So, I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, okay. I mean, but yeah, spoiler alert, like, I have no love for the Democratic Party. I only vote for the Democratic Party because they are marginally better than the Republican Party. That's it. I have no kind of red team, blue team, like, and neither should any of you who vote or you take part in the political process. You should have no loyalty to any party. You should be pushing the people who can win. And pushing the people who are going to the best people who can win.
The people who represent working people who can win.
That's it. That's what I mean. Who's pushing the best values who can win. So I don't care if they kill it. Like I want to either take over the Democratic Party or I want it dead. Because it serves no purpose but to line the pockets of Wall Street and the super rich.
The billionaires
and billionaires. It does nothing for the working people. So therefore, it has no utility, and I cast it off.
Mm-hmm. And look at the like if you need an example of that, like look at the Affordable Care Act. I was just having a conversation about this with my one of my work coworkers today, and their son just turned 18, And so he's no longer on like her insurance, or he wasn't on her insurance. He was on Medicaid, but now he has to apply for his own Medicaid. Mm. And there was a long sort of like, you know, workaround for her having to, for him having to like qualify for it.
Gross.
And basically we sort of like talked about how our insurance plans as teachers, and she's a paraeducator, which means you do most of the work that teachers do for a fraction of the pay.
So gross.
And also you get like less, it's bad. They're great, by the way. These people, like people that do these jobs, are some of the most important people in education. It's a real disaster that they can get away with paying them so little. But anyway, we were just talking about how, as time marches on, our so-called really good insurance programs get worse and worse. Mm-hmm. It costs so much to add her to her insurance.
There's no difference between you having a high deductible insurance plan and having no insurance.
Right.
An insurance plan you can't pay for is the same as having no insurance.
You still pay premiums.
Not let your job hustle you into this.
Mm-hmm. But as time has gone on, like premiums have gone up. Deductibles have gone up, coverage for prescription medicine has gone down, and it's just right. Like, well, then this has all happened since the Affordable Care Act. So the sort of limitations that have been in that program from the beginning are really starting to bite us in the butt, right? And the only possible solution is a Medicare for All program that everybody's in, nobody's out. You have full coverage of everything at the point of service, and you know there's literally no alternative. It's that or basically just the Hunger Games.
I'll give you a great example. Like everybody, there's so many people out there. You see those silly little commercials of like the general car insurance or those cut rate like car insurance companies. Or a lot of us just have, even if we've got like Allstate or Esurance or whatever, will have, you know, minimum coverage. Yeah, so you're insured, right? You get to go around, yeah, here's my insurance card. Isn't that great? Now, how many of y'all out there who've had that type of insurance got into an accident before? Even when that wasn't your fault?
Yeah.
What happened after that? You got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Your car was totaled. Your car was messed up. You got nothing because your insurance was bad. It's the same thing having high deductible insurance that you're still paying premiums for, that you're still paying for prescription drugs, is like you telling me, I you know what, I need a car so I can get to work. And I tell you, well, fine, you can't afford a car to get to work. There's a Ferrari dealership on the end of the block. That Ferrari dealership on the end of the block is the same thing as you not having a car because you can't afford it. It's outrageous. It has to go away. No, we can't do a public option because insurance companies will just offload everyone who has pre-existing conditions
or they just don't want to cover
under the government, and the government and health plan will be terrible because it's taking on all this risk and nobody's paying into it.
Right, and then the only good plans will be the ones that people can afford.
Right.
Or I'm sorry, the only ones that would be good would be the ones that people can pay for.
Yeah, it's Medicare for All, folks. That's it.
It's got to be in like getting like when the question comes up, and this is one of the things that like media and like press and like these, you know, Jake Tappers on the debate stage or whatever don't understand, is when they say like, are you actually saying that you want to take away people's insurance, their private insurance? And
no.
I don't know any single person in the world who says, man, I really, really do wish that I can, you know, I really want to step up and go to bat for Blue Cross or Humana or, you know, one of these other, you know, soulless, even if they're nonprofit, quote unquote, asterisk star or whatever. You know, behemoths, they really are. They're monsters that take over, you know, the entire industry. They basically have cornered that sector so profoundly, and even more so with Obamacare, that you know, nobody cares. Nobody gives a damn about their healthcare provider. They care about their doctors, yes, But they don't care about Blue Cross.
And that's the thing is we don't even go, and I probably said on the show 100 times. I'll say it again for anybody who's listening and give you ammo, either that you don't know about Medicare for All, you want to talk to people about Medicare for All. We don't even go as far as the British system, which is the NHS, the National Health Service.
Which has provisions for private insurance.
Yes, and they are government health. The government provides health care. Medicare for All, it does not do that. All Medicare for All does, this is all it does, it takes the bill that would have went to your insurance company, that your insurance company would have offloaded to you. So we can even cut that out. It takes the bill, especially at point of service where you have to pay. Think about when you have to pay your copay. And you, when you're standing in line at CVS to get your drugs, we have to pay for that. It takes that bill. Instead of going to you, it goes to the government.
And it ends up
being
cheaper.
And it's cheaper. So your taxes are going to go up.
Less than your insurance that you wouldn't have to pay anymore.
Right.
Already cost.
But your insurance bill is going to go down more.
To zero.
To zero.
So whatever the tax increase is, if it's you know $50 a month or whatever, or $50 like $200 a year, or like whatever the amount is, the total cost of everything is going to go down as well. That's the other thing, like the total cost, because there's so much inefficiency that goes along with all these insurance companies that just need to get a profit. And that's one of the things that's also sort of like misunderstood. And in addition to all of that, there is the need under a or there is, I'm sorry, the opportunity under the Medicare for All system to bargain as a singular unit,
right,
with prescription drug providers,
right,
to get the best price. So you basically, you're not able to be divided and conquered because you're able to bargain directly as a one huge unit. And
that's
if anybody understands economy of scale,
companies have to fight so hard against it.
Yeah, and that's why they're doing it, and that's why they're giving, you know, they support people like, you know, everybody left of basically Bernie Sanders, everybody right of Bernie Sanders rather, mm-hmm. And they all just are just willing to give it away, you know. They're willing to sort of like just continue to take. They'll give millions of dollars to all of these candidates for president and all these senators and House members and at the state and local governments as well. They'll give them tons of money because that is cheaper to them than system would be.
Absolutely,
this is an existential threat, and this is why they're fighting it so hard. This is an existential threat to the insurance company, which is nothing but a leech on our society. We need to kill these cockroaches, man. We need to kill the cockroaches. We need to exterminate the pests.
They gotta go. They gotta go. They gotta go. Mm-hmm. They gotta go. Nana's gotta get her meds. I think we're good.
Yeah. Well, you can listen to Good Morning Comrade every Tuesday. On WHIV FM 102.3. You can also check us out online, WHIVFM.com /good-morning-comrade. You can also check out our website, goodmorningcomrade.com. We get all of our information, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all at Good Morning Comrade. I'm sorry, Twitter is Comrade Morning. Follow me on Twitter. And-